The Food Establishment. Life in the Land of the Rising Soufflé, or is it the Rising Meringue? One day, I awoke having had my first in a long series of food anxiety dreams. The way it goes is this. There are 8 people coming to dinner in 20 minutes, and I am in an utter panic because I have forgotten to buy the food, plan the menu, set the table, clean the house, and the supermarket is closed. I knew that I had become a victim of the dreaded food obsession syndrome and would have to do something about it. This article is what I did. Incidentally, I anticipated that my interviews on this would be sublime gourmet experiences, with each of my subjects forcing little goodies down my throat. But no. All I got from over 20 interviews were 2 raw potatoes that were guaranteed by their owner, who kept them in a special burlap bag on her terrace, to be the only potatoes worth eating in all the world. Perhaps they were. I don't know, though. They tasted exactly like the other potatoes I've had in my life. September 1968. You might have thought they'd have been polite enough not to mention it at all, or that they'd wait at least until they got through the reception line before starting to discuss it, or that they'd hold off at least until after they had tasted the food, 4 tables of it, spread about the 4 corners of the 4 seasons, and gotten drinks in hand. But people in the food establishment are not noted for their manners or their patience, particularly when there is fresh gossip, and none of them had come to the party because of the food. They had come, most of them, because they were associated with the Time Life Cookbooks, a massive, high-budget venture that has managed to involve nearly everyone who is anyone in the food world. Julia Child was a consultant on the first book, and James Beard had signed on to another, and Paula Peck, who bakes, and Nika Hazelton, who reviews cookbooks for the New York Times Book Review, and M.F.K. Fisher, usually of The New Yorker, and Waverly Root of Paris, France, and Pierre Frenet, the former chef of Le Pavillon, who is now head chef at Howard Johnson's. And in charge of it all, Michael Field, the bird-like, bespectacled, frenzied gourmet cook and cookbook writer, who stood in the reception line where everyone was beginning to discuss it. Michael was a wreck. A wreck, a wreck, a wreck, as he himself might have put it. Just that morning, the very morning of the party, Craig Claiborne of the New York Times, who had told the Time Life people he would not be a consultant for their cookbooks even if they paid him $100,000, had ripped the first Time Life cookbook to shreds and tatters. Merde alors, as Craig himself might have put it, how that man did rip that book to shreds and tatters. He said that the recipes, which were supposed to represent the best of French provincial cooking, were not even provincial. He said that everyone connected with the venture ought to be ashamed of himself. He was rumored to be going about town telling everyone that the picture of the soufflé on the front of the cookbook was not even a soufflé. It was a meringue. Merde alors! He attacked Julia Child, the hitherto unknockable. He referred to Field, who runs a cooking school and is author of 2 cookbooks, merely as a former piano player. Not that Field wasn't a former piano player, but actually identifying him as one. Well, as far as Craig and I are concerned, Field was saying as the reception line went on, the gauntlet is down. And worst of all, or at least it seemed worst of all that day, Craig had chosen the day of the party for his review. Poor Michael. How simply frightful. How humiliating. How delightful. Why did he have to do it today? Moaned Field to Claiborne's close friend, Chef Pierre Frenet. Why? Why indeed? The theories ranged from Gothic to Byzantine. Those given to the historical perspective said that Craig had never had much respect for Michael, and they traced the beginnings of the rift back to 1965, when Claiborne had gone to a restaurant Field was running in East Hampton and given it 1 measly star. Perhaps, said some, but why include Julia in the blast? Craig had done that, came the reply, because he had never liked Michael and wanted to tell Julia to get out of Field's den of thieves. Perhaps, said still others. But mightn't he also have done it because his friend Frenet had signed on as a consultant to the Time Life cookbook of Haute Cuisine just a few weeks before, and Craig wanted to tell him to get out of that den of thieves? Perhaps, said others. But it might be even more complicated. Perhaps Craig had done it because he was furious at Michael Field's terrible review in the New York Review of Books of Gloria Blay Miller's The Thousand Recipe Chinese Cookbook, which Craig had praised in the Times. Now, while all this was becoming more and more arcane, there were a few who secretly believed that Craig had done the deed because the Time Life cookbook was as awful as he thought it was. But most of those people were not in the food establishment.